This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who is the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I will be joined by a different expert or experts from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we will discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and the advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help by providing you information and also to give you hope. We'll answer your questions and give you the latest possible information on the treatment of this disease. If you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call us at the following number. It's 888-234-4YCC. We'll try to answer your questions today on the air or in a future broadcast.
Today we have a very interesting program which focuses on life after cancer. And our special guests today are Dr. Ruth McCorkle, the Florence Wahl Professor of Nursing, and Dr. Tish Knopf, the American Society Professor of Oncology Nursing, both at the Yale School of Nursing. And both Ruth and Tish have really dedicated their lives towards focusing on the care of cancer patients and survivors. Ruth and Tish, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, let's begin our discussion by a topic that comes up very frequently for people that have just finished treatment. And I wanted to ask, get your input on it. But what are some of the emotions, Tish, that someone experiences after they've been through the cancer experience and their treatment has just ended?
Well, I think that when treatment is ended, everybody expects the patient to be thrilled, happy, go out and celebrate. But in fact, a lot of patients say they feel a little insecure. They're a little uncertain. They have mixed emotions because they've been seeing their physicians regularly, and they feel very secure that the cancer is keeping, that the treatment is keeping the cancer away. So it takes a little while to get to that celebration point.
So there really is this sense of separation anxiety, would you say, when patients kind of finish their cancer therapy?
Yeah, they feel very secure when they're going and they're seeing their nurse and their oncologist every week or every 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden you say, oh, you're all done. Come back in 3 months. So it's a transition time for them, and they need a little support during that time.
Well, along those lines, any advice that you would give a patient who's undergoing treatment now and soon will be finished about what's about to occur, that transition? Or for the other matter, any advice that you'd sort of share with physicians about that process?
I think my single message would be prepared. Have as much information as you need. So ask your doctor or your nurse, what symptoms should I expect to experience? How long should they last? Who should I call if I have questions? How should I talk to my family? Those kinds of things, so that you leave the treatment period knowing what to do if something comes up, so that you have some sense of security.
Maybe I'll direct the next question to Ruth. We know that obviously when patients come to us for treatment and then come to us for follow-up treatment, not only are the patients involved, but obviously their loved ones, their family members, their very close friends are also involved. And so what are some of the emotions that the family support system kind of also runs through?
Well, the family members are really greatly affected. They are sort of the unsung hero of this experience. And what usually happens with people with cancer who finish treatment, they begin to start to get well, whereas the burden on the family really continues. And often the family member will even get sick caring for the person who is recovering because they have to continue to take on some of the responsibilities that the ill person had while they're regaining their strength. And sometimes even their function is limited, so the family member will have to take on some of those responsibilities. So it's important for family members to sort of catch up with the patient and where they are with the cancer experience and understanding and really be kept informed about that.
And Ruth, are there support systems in place that these family members can take advantage of?
There are. There are good support groups that are offered at our cancer center for families. There are also the internet and the web, the cancer information line. There are a number of things physically that we can help family members with. Also schools, teachers, conferences. It's really important that we keep the whole family member's support system also informed about this.
Ruth, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because the process of recovery for the patient takes a certain amount of time, and then you've just brought up this issue that for the family there's a process of recovery too. I'm sure every family is a little bit different, but is there a trajectory, amount of time that feels like it would be comfortable for a family to sort of go back to normal functioning? And is there a point beyond which you'd say, geez, this is really becoming a problem and this family really needs some help?
Well, I don't know if a family ever gets back to normal. I think you have to sort of think about yourself recovering and becoming a new person and a new lease on life and a new opportunity. So if the healthcare professionals will help to keep the patient and members of the family informed at the same time, keep them on the same page, then their recovery course should be somewhat congruent. But it isn't always.
In a couple of minutes, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the leftover, the side effects of treatment. But you just raised an interesting point about becoming a new person. So from the experience of cancer, what are some of the positive things that sometimes come into being for a person or for their family?
Well, we know when a person is diagnosed with cancer, they go through what's called an existential plight. And so this gives you an opportunity to really reevaluate your life and reevaluate your goals. So when you do that, you reprioritize what's important to you and your family, and it gives you an opportunity to make those changes.
Maybe just now touching on what Ken said about side effects, and Tish, I'll direct this to you. I think as we're now getting much more effective in terms of the different types of treatment options that are available to cancer patients, obviously patients are living longer, but there are obviously long-term side effects consequences to some of the treatments that patients undergo. So what are the side effects and symptoms that you try to advise patients to look out for once they finish their initial therapies?
I think the most important thing is to tell patients that the side effects don't end the last day of treatment and that they need to be prepared that the most common physical side effect is probably not having enough energy and feeling fatigued. And in contrast to what most people think in terms of taking a nap, probably the best thing to do for that is simply like walking 20 minutes a day. To try and combat the fatigue. Other common problems include not sleeping well, and I think these are problems that you can easily talk with your physician and your nurse about managing because they are manageable. Some patients have difficulty concentrating. Some of that is combined with psychological responses, fear of recurrence, every time you get a new symptom, worrying, what does this symptom mean? And I think there are lots of supportive interventions psychologically to help people. Then there are common problems that interfere with just trying to manage your everyday life and concerns. Can you get back to being the mother and back to your normal work? Do you have the energy to do that? So it really becomes a combination of psychological and physical symptoms that definitely get better over time, but shouldn't be dismissed and should be really discussed with your providers.
I want to ask you about exercise a little bit more, because I know that a lot of your research that's been done at Yale has been on the role of exercise for women with breast cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, I think everybody, you know, everybody should exercise now at least 5 days a week. There are multiple benefits. There are psychological benefits. You feel better. You have a better sense of yourself. But in terms of cancer survivors, most cancer patients become less functional during treatment. You really get deconditioned. You're not as active. And so you really need to regain what you lost while you were getting treated. So exercise can really help you regain your physical functioning. And in the study that I did, we particularly looked at women with breast cancer because weight gain is a problem. So we wanted to keep them from gaining weight, which, in fact, that's exactly what we managed to do.
Well, I have to say, as you were talking about exercising 5 days a week, I think the four of us around the table might have been looking at each other saying, "Whoa, I guess we should be doing that too."
So it's yeah, I think so.
It's good advice. Anyways, we're going to take a break in a minute for a medical minute. We'd like to remind you to please email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call us at 1-888-234-4YCC. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about life after cancer with Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Dr. Tish Knopf from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a medical minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is a new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2006, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule an annual mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers such as the Yale Cancer Center to make innovative new treatments which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. For more information, visit their website at yalecancercenter.org. That's yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guests, Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Dr. Tish Knopf, two experts at the Yale Cancer Center and the Yale School of Nursing.
Ruth, I think one issue that always comes up in patients who finished their treatments and who are now being seen in follow-up and may then experience side effects, consequences related to their therapy. I think the question that comes up is, to whom should they be seeking medical attention? Should it be their primary health care provider, you know, their general internist, or should they also contact directly the cancer treatment expert who took care of them?
Well, the recommended guidelines for site-specific cancer differ according to, for myself, I had breast cancer in the first year. I saw my oncologist every 3 months, and then every 4 months, and then when I got into the fifth year, every 6 months, and now I'm a 14-year survivor, so I still see him annually. But it's really important to also go to your primary care physician. There are a host of other things that can go wrong, so ideally you want your primary care physician and your oncologist to be working hand in hand. But the guidelines for site-specific are well-defined, and I think it's important people follow them.
I think one thing that I've learned just in speaking with, you know, our neighborhood, is that a lot of women, rather than going to primary care physicians or general internists, tend to seek their medical care from the OBGYN physicians, which I think in most cases probably is appropriate, but I think perhaps in cancer survivors that may not be quite as appropriate as seeking medical care from a primary care physician.
So what do the men do?
Men, I have to say, probably are even worse. Men in my neighborhood, including our host, in my own household, are very poor about follow-up.
Or about going to see the doctor in general, for that matter.
Well, I think it is a balance, certainly when you're in childbearing ages and you have children, that it is important also sometimes to see your OBGYN physician, but I do think it's important personally to have a primary care physician.
Actually, a question for both of you. But after someone has completed their initial treatment for cancer, what type of support system and resources do we have available, for example, here at the Yale Cancer Center for our patients that have finished treatment? Are these useful for women and men as they go through this experience?
Well, I think at the Yale Cancer Center, we have a variety of support groups. But I think the most important thing for patients who finish therapy is to look at themselves and their family. You know, where are they in their stage of life? We know that younger patients with school-aged children have more competing demands. They have greater challenges to adjust and finish therapy. There are other unique aspects. In the New Haven area, that there are several support groups for women of color that have collaborated with the Cancer Center, and women of color like to go to support groups with women who look the same as they do, and it's very helpful, and they have unique ways of coping and managing. So it really has to be individualized. Other patients don't like support groups, but individualized counseling might be the best thing. Family counseling might be the best thing for some patients and their families. So it's really important to talk with your nurses and your doctors to figure out what's the best kind of support for me and how can we get it.
Are there any differences, Ruth or Tish, with respect to, say, Caucasian population, minority underserved population, to follow up with their oncologist once everything has finished in terms of the therapy?
We've had a project called Connecting Sisters, which is for women of color. And this is a community-based project through the School of Nursing and the Cancer Center. And what we have found in this project is that there are some unique needs. There are some unique ways that women of color need support and unique aspects even to managing their care that is different than the care that white women get. And we need to better understand these and help support them. But there are several groups which are available to them to now, Nubian Sisters, Sisters Journey. And we're trying to pull all of these groups together so that newly diagnosed women of color know where the resources are.
Ruth, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the issue of quality of life both during and after treatment. And I'm relatively new to Yale. I've been here for about 6 months. But what I've seen is a very big emphasis on quality of life. Some of your work has been on working with men with prostate cancer and the quality of life issues after their treatment. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, when a man gets diagnosed with prostate cancer, it's a pretty emotional time for both him and his wife, and most of the people in our study have been married. And what's interesting about men with prostate cancer and their wives is the relationship really does, for the man, focus on his sexual aspect, whereas the woman is really more concerned about the marriage aspects and what this is going to do. So the couple really can benefit from counseling and assistance during this time. And depending upon what kind of treatment they get, there could be severe side effects of incontinence and impotence. And there are a number of resources that are available for that.
Now, you're doing work on biofeedback. Can you, or at least I guess there's some of that work going on at Yale. Can you say a couple words about that?
Well, one of my postdocs who has a Kay Award is looking at using electrode stimulation on the peritoneum for men to help them with their incontinence and their erection. And she's having some success with this, and we're hoping that it will make a difference.
Well, again, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We are going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. And please stay tuned to learn more information about life after cancer with Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Dr. Tish Knopf from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Fairfield.
I visited a walk-in clinic on Christmas Eve in 1999 because I thought I had the flu. The doctor there suspected that it was something more serious, and as he examined my belly, he found a mass. I was referred to Dr. Tom Rutherford, a gynecologic oncologist and researcher at Yale Cancer Center, where I had surgery and received chemotherapy for stage 2 ovarian cancer. Because of early detection, excellent treatment, and the benefit of the latest research, I recently celebrated 6 years as a cancer survivor. Today, I'm a fervent believer that women should pay attention to changes in their bodies and should not be reluctant to tell their physicians any concerns they have, even those they feel might sound trivial. Early detection is the best way to cure cancer.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guests, Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Dr. Tish Knopf, who have focused their career on the care of people with cancer and on their families. Well, as we come back, I did want to share with you an email question. This is from Beth, who lives in North Haven. She said, I finished treatment for breast cancer in October and still find that many of my coworkers and acquaintances ask me questions I find very personal about my recovery. How can I answer them?
Well, I find this is very difficult for many patients. Actually, when Tish and I do the Survivor's Day for the Cancer Center, we almost always get this question. And one of the things that I think is most important is to develop a script. And that you have it like almost like a mantra, where you tell people, you know, I'm recovering, whatever it is, get 2 or 3 sentences, and that anybody that you encounter, you use this script with, and it will really let you be in control of what it is that they ask you and say. And you end the script with saying, I'm doing quite well, thank you for your interest. I think it's really important that people have control over this and they surround themselves about people that make them feel good and that do not bring them down. Don't let your energies be overcome by negative people.
I think that's great advice because I think what we're seeing and experiencing is that a number of cancer patients, cancer survivors, really do feel very nervous when they kind of go back and re-enter the workplace. And so I think this really does help them get control over their lives.
I want to change topics a little bit. I mean, we've talked about people finishing treatment, but we have an email that I'll read in a minute, but it addresses the issue of cancer as a chronic disease. And so I'm going to read this email from Bonnie in Clinton. She says, I've done a lot of research on cancer over the internet, and I'm confused as to why some resources refer to cancer as a chronic illness. Can you explain this?
Well, I think there's 2 ways to look at cancer as a chronic illness. One, for the patient who received therapy, which we hope will keep the cancer away. So why is it a chronic illness for them? Well, they have to continue to go back for routine surveillance to see their specialist, their oncologist, or their primary care physician. They may have some symptoms which persist for a while. And psychologically, it takes a while for the cancer to sort of become more background instead of right in the foreground. So you're thinking about it. Patients in support groups, you know, at Yale that I've done for years always say, my family thinks I should be all better, but I keep thinking about this. This is why I come to the support group. And then we have survivors who are still in active treatment. So they're managing cancer now as a chronic illness over many, many years and working and dealing with treatment. So, you know, our treatments have become so much more effective that survivors are living for many, many years now.
Ruth, maybe you could outline, review for our listening audience some of the services that are available here at the Yale Cancer Center for cancer survivors.
Well, I think one of the most important general resource for people is a cancer information line. We've been running that for years. It's a regional, but you call for cancer 1-800 for cancer. The others are we have a host of, through our social work department, a host of support groups that are run both by nurses. We also have the Heroes Clinic that is a part of the pediatric, and these are a clinic that follows children who have really survived pediatric cancers. And the oldest person, I think, in that clinic now is 41. So, I mean, it really does speak to the wonderful survival rates of pediatric cancer.
Great. Maybe I'll pose this question, follow-up question, to Ken. Since you're the director of the survivorship clinic here at the Yale Cancer Center, Ken, maybe you can explain to the listening audience what goes on there.
Well, the Heroes Clinic has been in existence for several years, and it's been for survivors of childhood cancer. What's one of the most exciting things for me at Yale is the beginning of a survivorship clinic for adults who've been through the experience of cancer, which includes my wife, who had acute leukemia 7 years ago, and thankfully is doing well. And some of the major issues that we hope to deal with are, one, as we've discussed, the long-term consequences of therapy, including getting your energy back, starting back to regular activities, getting back to work, and things like that. The other project I'm very excited about, and I'm going to refer to Tish as well, is something we call an end-of-treatment summary, is helping people at the end of treatment to make sure they have a real clear grasp of what they've been through in terms of their therapy, and then what kind of health issues may come up in the future. And so, Tish, I'll pass it on if you don't mind, but if you
sure.
could tell us a little bit about your interests.
Yeah, we thought it would be very helpful for patients to have a little summary statement at the end of their treatment so they know exactly what they, what kind of surgery they had, what their pathology report said, what kind of drugs they received, if they received drugs, and then really importantly, what they can do to start feeling better, what health promotion kinds of activities they can be doing to keep themselves healthy, not just to keep the cancer away, but we want them to be healthy so that they don't get high blood pressure, so they don't get heart disease. And so there are a lot of very common things related to exercise and diet that really will protect them across their lives.
Following up on that, Tish, what are some of the diet and nutritional recommendations that we can give to cancer survivors?
Well, right now, the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetic Association, and the American Heart Association have all come together and are prescribing the same diet for prevention of cancer and other diseases. So it's, you know, eating more fruits and vegetables, not having red meat every day. So it's a very common sense, practical nutritional advice that anybody can follow.
So it's good, actually, not only for preventing the cancer from coming back, but also for just general health issues.
It is for general health issues. We know that obesity is becoming a big problem, and not only is that related to cancer, but also other diseases. So again, diet, and you know that 20 minutes of exercise every day, find a friend, figure out how you can do it, take your dog, but it's really important.
Ruth, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the whole topic of palliative care. Palliative care, the term is used in many different ways, but can you tell us a little bit about some of your interests in regards to palliative care and what we're doing at the Yale Cancer Center?
Well, palliative care used to be equated with end-of-life care, but in actuality, palliative care is really good symptom management, and it should be done from day one when a person comes in at diagnosis. You really do want to have the quality of life and keeping people as comfortable as possible when they're going through this really life-altering experience. And we have wonderful palliative care resources, which, Ken, you're a major part of at our institution. And we have palliative care rounds for patients who are inpatient. We have a wonderful master's prepared nurse who assists in pain management. So it's quite effective.
Well, we're going to sign off in a minute, but Ruth and Tish, in your opinion, what are the key points that you'd like to share with our listening audience about cancer survivorship and the period after treatment?
I think that you need to be prepared, you need to have the information you want, and you need to feel empowered. That would be my message, be prepared.
Well, cancer is a life-altering experience. Surround yourself by positive people. And please take care of yourself, and you should be able to realize when something's wrong and take care of yourself.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Ruth McCorkle and Dr. Tish Knopf for joining us on Healthline.
And I also, too, would like to thank both Ruth and Tish for a terrific session. And remember, tune in to WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our program next time will focus on the causes and cures of breast cancer, and our guest will be Dr. Mike DiGiovanna, Associate Professor of Oncology and Pharmacology at the Yale Cancer Center. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.